The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And those of you who are sitting out in the community hall, I just want to check and see if you can hear me okay. It's okay? Great. And there's also space in here. There's plenty of chairs in here if you wanted to come in. It's fine to come in. So Gil and I last week taught a six-day retreat at the Insight Retreat Center. And those of you who have attended those retreats know that we have a theme usually for those retreats. And I'd like to explore a little bit about that theme. There were some questions that came up. We usually have evening questions, and there was a lot of questions that people posted on the board for us to answer, and we did not come anywhere close to having time to answer all those questions. So tonight I thought I'd explore some of those questions, in particular about the theme of doubt. So the one of the themes that we explored on the retreat was the flip side of doubt, and that is of confidence. And we looked at and explored how confidence develops for us in our practice. We generally, in the beginning of our practice, we maybe don't have so much of a sense of the we don't have so much of a sense of how the practice might work or what the results might be, but we maybe have seen someone or read something that inspires us to engage, to begin to explore for ourselves what this teaching, what these practices have to offer for us. And this is actually the beginning of confidence, the willingness to explore, the willingness to engage with some of the teachings. The teachings require a kind of a fundamental shift of perspective from the way we usually think about our lives, explore our experience, engage with the world. It asks us to, rather than engage with the world in our habitual ways, which may be, for instance, if we are experiencing some kind of a conflict in relationship, typically we think that what we need to do is somehow work with, resolve the conflict, fix the situation, have the person see our point of view. And none of those things are wrong or bad to do, but the perspective of the practice asks us to also look at this conflict from a completely different perspective. And that is from the perspective of, what is it like to be a human being feeling conflict? Not so much to try to fix or change anything, or fix or change anyone, or fix or change a situation, but to look at the seeds, the roots, the place that conflict is born within our own experience, like the source from which it comes. And so we're asked to turn and look at our struggles, our conflict, our inner struggles, our struggles in relationship. And this shift of perspective initially may seem kind of odd or strange. I know the first time I met this practice, I was in the Peace Corps and was really struggling with some difficulties. And a friend sent me a book, and I read this book and basically got the idea in reading this book that rather than acting on your emotions, try observing them. And the main emotion that I was experiencing at that point was anger. And I thought, well, try observing my anger. What good is that going to do? That was my, you know, it was so counterintuitive to me to turn and look at my anger. To what is it like to be a human being feeling anger? It was not, I had no clue how that would have any impact or help me at all. Fortunately for me, I was willing to try it. And that shift of perspective, that turning to look at our struggles, begins to give us an understanding, begins to verify for us the power of this practice, the power of mindfulness, the power of wisdom and awareness joined together. The way we're asked to explore our experience is not by, like anger, for instance. It's not by exploring it by thinking about it and thinking about why I'm right and why they're wrong, but rather, again, the experience. What is it? What is this experience of anger? What is it like to be a human being feeling anger? In the very first few weeks of even trying that for myself, when I was willing to give that a try, I began to experience some benefits. I began to see my mind no longer quite so caught up in the anger. I found there was more space, more ease, less reactivity. And so there was a beginning of verifying that confidence. There was a beginning of verifying my trust in this practice. Within a few short months, I had some understandings about my own mind through this simple practice of observing what it's like to be a human being that's angry, that I could see this practice is taking me in the right direction. This is really helpful. So there was some sense of verifying the confidence, verifying the benefits, essentially, the benefits of the practice. And yet, even with these experiences of our practice helping us and us actually seeing directly in our direct experience some of the benefits, we still get caught. We still find our minds habitually stuck in our reactivity, and we doubt. Like, we may have some experience at some point where we see, oh, I see how helpful it is to be mindful. It gives me space around my depression or my confusion or my pride or my anger. And we have a sense of the value of it. But then 2 days later, we're caught back in that same pattern. And it's like, did I really see that space? I mean, was I deluding myself 2 days ago when I thought this practice helped or what? You know, so we get caught again and we doubt. We doubt ourselves, we doubt the practice, we doubt the teachings. And so in the unfolding of this practice, there is a kind of a, we could say an alternation or a, there are times when we clearly see the benefits, and there's times when the benefits are not so obvious to us. And those are times, I think, when doubt tends to creep in. And so we have times where it's really helpful to have some tools for working with doubt. And this is what I'd like to explore this evening, some of this. The fortunate thing is that doubt is also simply some state of mind. Just like anger, doubt comes up in our mind. It is simply the arising of a mind state. And the Buddha offered a lot of tools for observing our minds, and so we can use these same tools with doubt, provided we can recognize it. And that's actually one of the challenges with doubt. Now, doubt relates to so many different aspects of our practice. We can have doubt in the teachings themselves, as I did in that very first book that I got. You know, that I got that. It was the book Everyday Zen by Joko Beck, and I read through it, and I actually didn't understand much of what it said. You know, some of it was seemingly, you know, obscure, like stuff about well, I don't remember actually if there was stuff about not self in that book, but there's it was just some perspectives that it was offering that didn't quite seem, it didn't quite make sense to me. But this, you know, and this one about turn to observe your strong emotions rather than acting on them. Again, I doubted the benefit of that. I doubted that that would be helpful. And yet I was willing to engage, and so my doubt didn't prevent me from moving forward. But we can doubt the teachings. We can doubt, there's a lot of teachings that we may not have a verified experience with. You know, the teaching on not self is a very common one for people to have doubt in. It seems so clear and so obvious that there is someone here who is doing, who is acting, and so to have this an aspect of the teaching be that this sense of self is an illusion, that can create some challenge or some struggle in the mind. The teaching, for instance, that having what we want isn't the best path to happiness, isn't necessarily the best path to happiness. That too, that one can be kind of, what? Having what I want, you know, getting what I want may not be the best way to be happy. That also doesn't necessarily seem to land very well at times. And so there's certain ways that the teachings may not resonate or connect. And yet some of the teachings, and this is where I really think the Buddha pointed us, he said, you don't have to, like, believe these teachings. You don't have to believe in not self. You don't have to believe that, turning towards your difficult emotions will be a helpful tool. What he says is explore your experience. So his teachings, while he has articulations of a kind of a philosophy, his teachings are really rooted in practice to help us see for ourselves the benefits and the freedom that results from applying these tools. So the practices are a key for us here. He doesn't ask us to simply believe. He asks us to engage. And yet we may also doubt the practices. You know, for myself, metta, the practice of metta, this practice did not resonate very well with me for a number of years. And, you know, so it's like, there could be some doubt that would arise around that practice. And there were times where it's like, to engage with that practice created so much suffering for me. I just felt like, you know, that one's not for me. That one's not for me. So we can doubt the practices. We can, if in doubting the practices, that one may be a little bit more of a challenge for us, because if we doubt the practices, we may choose to not engage. As for myself, with the metta, I did choose not to engage in the metta practice for a number of years. Fortunately for me, there were other practices that resonated. And so those practices I was willing to engage in. And so sometimes with doubt, we also have to look at what works in our own experience. So for myself, the practice of metta wasn't a practice that I could get much traction with. And yet the practice of mindfulness did resonate for me. As I said, in that very first, few months of my mindfulness practice around observing anger, I began to experience some very important and freeing experiences. So we can doubt the teachings, we can doubt the practices. One of the other main, I think one of the biggest areas of doubt for us is doubt in our own capacity. You know, it's like we listen to the teachings, we see other people who may have benefited from these teachings, and we think, well, yeah, it seems to work for them, but I can't do it. I don't have the capacity. I'm not capable of engaging. And that doubt is probably one of the most insidious kinds of doubt, because it keeps us from even trying. It keeps us from engaging. Doubt has a kind of a quality, especially this doubt in ourselves. It has a quality of wavering. There's an analogy that the Buddha gives about doubt. He says it's like being lost in a wilderness. When you're lost in a wilderness, he says, you may take a few steps in this direction and think, oh, that can't be right. And then take a few steps in that direction and think, oh, that can't be right. And then take a few steps in another direction, and, oh, that can't be right. And so the doubt has that quality of, you know, we may go a little bit one way, a little bit another way, just like this wavering. We may have that around practices. It's like, oh, well, maybe I should do metta right now, or, you know, oh, may all beings be happy. No, that's not working. Let me try mindfulness of breathing. Breathing in, breathing out. Thinking, wait a minute, I'm thinking too much. Maybe I should try open awareness. And so, you know, not giving the mind much time to really land on a practice, we may find ourselves wavering. So with our mind caught in that kind of wavering, we don't engage, we don't connect, we don't explore the practice, and we don't explore our own abilities in the practice. And so the biggest tool or the biggest exploration with doubt, because of that wavering, I mean, actually what happens with doubt is that our minds tend to get caught in thought, hooked by thoughts or beliefs about teachings or practices or our own capabilities. I can't do this. I'm hopeless. It's, you know, I've never been able to do this, and I can stay with two breaths and then my mind is off thinking, you know, what's the use of even doing this? We are caught in thoughts about our capability, or caught in thought about which practice to do, or in our minds thinking about, what is this teaching of not self anyway? How can that possibly make any sense? So basically, we are caught in thought, often with doubt. We are lost in thought and believing those thoughts, perhaps believing the ineffectiveness of practices, believing in the incapability of our own capacities, or thinking about whether or not particular teachings make sense to us or not. And so very often with doubt, we are thinking about the practice, we're thinking about the teachings, or we're thinking about our own abilities in the practice. And this is a good clue for us. If you find yourself thinking about these areas, doubt is probably there. That's probably the motivating mind state behind those thoughts. So doubt actually thrives on non-mindfulness. It thrives on unawareness. And so the recognition of doubt, the recognition, oh, these are doubt thoughts. These thoughts are fueled by doubt. Even that simple recognition has a power to connect us with mindfulness again, and helps to cut through the unawareness that doubt is feeding on. So that simple recognition of, oh, these are doubting thoughts. It may not stop the thoughts, but the simple recognition of that can be really, really helpful. If the doubt seems to be about the teachings or the practices, the most helpful relationship that I found to that kind of doubt is to reflect or to remember that the Buddha encouraged us to try the practice for ourselves. That essentially, you know, some of these teachings are so counterintuitive that it's, we're not going to really be able to think our way through them. And to instead to be willing to engage, willing to explore, to essentially run the experiment, as I did in that very first example that I gave when I said I got this, received this book that said, pay attention to your difficult emotions rather than acting on them. And my first thought was, well, what good is that going to do? But there was a willingness to try it and see. The friend who sent me that book, I trusted her. The book said it would be helpful. It's like, well, I didn't know whether I could trust the book, but I was willing to try. So that when you see that there are doubts about the teachings or the practices, a willingness to, can you connect with a willingness to run the experiment? Just give it a go. We don't have to believe it in order to run the experiment. See what happens as you engage. Sometimes doubt is mixed up with other emotions. It can be really layered, in fact, on top of many other things. On one retreat, I found I was caught in a state of doubt for quite a while, a couple hours, I think. And at some point, I don't remember, you know, what the thoughts were about, but at some point I recognized, okay, well, doubt's happening. I guess I practice with doubt. That shift was huge. Just that willingness to say, oh, right, I can practice with doubt the same way that I practice with other states of mind. And so I started to look at it. It's like, okay, what does doubt feel like? That was the question I asked myself. And immediately, very quickly, the answer was present. Wow, doubt feels like grief. And with that, I was present for my grief, and doubt was nowhere to be seen. Somehow the grief had morphed into doubt, and in not being present for the doubt, it masked the grief. And so as soon as I could be present, oh, here's doubt. What does doubt feel like? It's like, oh, I was overwhelmed, or not overwhelmed, but I really had the sense of, oh, grief. Okay, grief. This is what grief feels like. And very quickly, I was right back in the practice. So sometimes turning towards doubt can open us to other emotions that may be present. On another retreat, I saw a much more layered experience around doubt. This one was kind of interesting how this one unfolded, and I'll give you how I practiced with it because, it's a tool in and of itself. This exploration that I did. I was doing walking meditation, and I kept noticing. I was in the midst of, I'd probably sat the 3-month course at IMS the previous fall, and I was sitting the month-long course at Spirit Rock, and the thoughts that kept coming up in my mind were something like doubt around whether I should be sitting so many long retreats. So there was doubt in myself rather than doubt in the teachings. So I noticed that these thoughts were coming up in walking a lot, these thoughts of, I shouldn't be here, I'm doing way too many long retreats. And so what I did as I was walking was I would just do my walking, and then suddenly I would find myself lost in thought about these doubt thoughts. And so what I began doing is, as I was doing the walking meditation, as soon as I noticed that I was lost in thought, I stopped. I stopped the walking and checked in. What's happening now? What's the state now? And this was very interesting, because it seemed that each time I did this, I got kind of the next layer down of, I got a little bit more information about what was going on in my mind. So the first time I was doing the walking and I noticed the thoughts, my mind kind of lost in thoughts, it was these thoughts around doubt about whether I should be sitting so many long retreats, doubt about should I be doing so much long-term practice, and then doing some more walking. So I'd stopped, I let myself take that in fully. Okay, what is that like? What is it like to doubt myself? And then when that kind of passed, I continued walking, and then I'd notice the mind kind of caught in some other thought, and I stop again. The next thought that came up was something around fear. Fear that I wasn't somehow measuring up, that I wasn't like a good yogi, something like that. And, okay, what does that feel like? I let myself feel that. This was a long walk. I don't remember how long this walk was, but I was walking outside. And so after that one kind of passed, I just like, walk again, keep walking. And then another storm of thought arose. And it's like, okay, what's this one? The next one was a feeling that I was unworthy to be spending so much time doing long retreat, that I had actually left my job to do this. You know, I had stopped working. And so there was a feeling that somehow that I was unworthy for that. And feeling into that sense of unworthiness, let that go and continued walking. The next thing that came up was a kind of a turning. I mean, the first ones were all about me and the practice, right? The first ones here were, you know, doubt that I should be doing long-term practice and fear that I wasn't measuring up, I wasn't a good enough yogi, and then unworthiness to be dedicating my life. So kind of all about me, right? All about me and my practice. The next one had a shift. The next set of thoughts that came up was a feeling of insecurity about my financial situation. So not to do with my practice, but more to do with having left my job. So there was that, whoa, okay, you know. Then the next thing I noticed was aversion to this insecurity. You know, it's like, this is not acceptable. That was what my mind was saying. And the next thing that I noticed was vulnerability, a feeling of vulnerability underneath this whole pattern. There was vulnerability. I had left my job. And with that, there was kind of a landing in a truth. There was some vulnerability there. Could I be with that vulnerability? And seeing, with that, there was a much more ease with resting in the present moment experience. There's a way that I kind of had touched into the core place where the entire pattern had sprung from, a feeling of vulnerability. So I think certain emotions and mind states can tend to be connected with doubt, and I think vulnerability is one of them. When we feel vulnerable, we doubt so much about how we can be safe. Feelings of inadequacy can also be connected with doubt. Fear of failure, self-doubt can be connected with self-doubt. Fear of the unknown, the variations on fear, fear of the unknown. As we practice, we start finding that both that entering into the present moment, that we don't actually know what the next moment is going to be. We don't know what we're stepping into in the future. And this you know, sense of, again, this is a truth, that we don't know what the next moment will be. And it leads to that sense of uncertainty, of fear. Sometimes our practice also takes us to states that we're not expecting. So many times, you know, I'd be like, oh, this is what I'm experiencing, you know, some state of something or other. And my mind would go, well, this can't be right. Experience feels completely ordinary. That can't be right. It's supposed to feel different. I'm being mindful. It's not supposed to feel completely ordinary. This can't be right. I must be doing something wrong. Or paying attention to the breath. And the breath gets like so quiet. It's like the breath gets really short, for instance, you know, paying attention to the breath. It's like, wait, this can't be right. When I pay attention to the breath, it's supposed to get like really long and smooth. It's not supposed to get short. This can't be right. The this can't be right thought, that's a good one to notice. You know, whatever's happening, whatever is happening, and it is by definition right. It's by definition, it's there. And so, what is that? Opening to that. So noticing these, this can't be right thoughts, that's doubt. That's doubt. So can you notice that? Can you recognize that? And open to what this is that you think can't be right. Another really helpful tool, I think, with doubt has to do with looking at belief. Because doubt, when it catches us, doubt is believed. I'm no good. I can't do this. I'm a failure. I can't do this practice. That can be just a thought in the mind. More often, I think, with that kind of thought, there's some level of belief in that thought. Often a complete belief in it. It's not even recognized as a belief. It is seen as truth. And so looking at our doubting thoughts as thoughts, and then recognizing how much belief is present for those thoughts. If there's much of the time when, as I said, when we're caught in doubt, there is a strong belief present. And we can also acknowledge, okay, there's doubting thoughts and believing is happening. That tool of acknowledging that a doubt is a belief actually has some potency to it. We sometimes feel like with certain thoughts like doubt, like I'm no good, I'm a failure, that kind of thought, I'm a failure. You know, if there's a lot of belief in the mind about that kind of thought, we might be trying to convince ourselves that that thought is false. You know, we might be exploring the possibility of, well, you're not a failure. You're doing it okay, you know. So we might be actually trying to convince ourselves that doubt, that thought is not true. And I've seen sometimes that when the mind is really caught in that belief, so there's that that thought, you're a failure, you can't do this, and it really believes it, when the mind really believes that thought, if you're trying to tell yourself, don't believe that thought, you're kind of working counter to what the mind is doing. You're in a way, it's like repressing or putting an aversive kind of state on top of the doubt and the belief. And so you can explore, perhaps, there is this thought, I'm a failure, and believing is happening. There's this thought, and there's the belief. Acknowledging it as a belief gives a little crack in the mind to recognizing that is actually what's happening. That is actually what's going on. There's the thought and there's the belief. And acknowledging it as a belief points out to the mind in that moment that it is not necessarily a fact, but it's a belief. And that gives the mind a little gap, a little wedge to enter into that experience and know just that's what's happening in this moment. It's a thought and believing is happening. It's actually a pretty powerful tool in working with really strong beliefs. Another thing that can be interesting to explore with certain kinds of thoughts. Now, this one around you're no good, you're a failure, that was one that was really familiar for me. And there were times when the belief was really strong, and there were times when I could see that thought come up and it'd be like, huh, I see that thought, but, you know, I don't even believe that thought right now. So beginning to recognize the kind of, say, you know, various levels of belief in our habitual kinds of doubting thoughts. Sometimes in this practice, you know, the more we practice with our doubting thoughts, the more we get familiar with the ways that we doubt, the more we actually start to see that sometimes these thoughts arise almost out of habit. I mean, the thoughts for me around you're no good, you're a failure, they have practiced so much in my mind has practiced those so much that there's a kind of a strong habit for those thoughts to arise. But at this point, there's the belief in those thoughts is pretty much gone. So those thoughts haven't stopped arising, but the believing in them has so radically diminished that this is basically not an issue in my mind anymore. This kind of doubt is not an issue for me anymore. So seeing that the gradations of belief is also a really interesting thing. You know, sometimes you may see, oh, there's that thought and there's no belief in it. Seeing those thoughts come up as simply thoughts without the belief, that's another powerful recognition, because so many times we strongly identify with these kinds of thoughts. We strongly identify with our doubt. And the seeing the relative level of belief begins to undermine our identification with them. We see these thoughts arise and they're just like, poof. It's like, well, I guess that one's not me. Because it came and went so fast. We can also connect with confidence, with faith, with trust as a kind of support for us in our practice, as a counter, in effect, to doubt. Cultivating, recognizing how the practice has supported us, consciously reflecting on what benefits we've gained from the practice. If you're in a period or a phase of, you know, I talked at the beginning about going through phases where we're having a sense of the benefits of practice in the moment. We are exploring and able to see some of that space, or even sometimes watch something just disappear right in front of our right in front of our minds, just as we look at it, it vanishes. Some struggle just goes away with the very seeing of it. So we sometimes are seeing the benefits right in the moment. And there's that sense of verified confidence that's coming along. It just, right in the moment, we see the benefits of the practice. And then other times, it feels a little bit more, oh, we're not so sure what's happening. We're paying attention to things, but we're not really seeing things in a new way. Or it's just like, it feels like a kind of a plateau, perhaps. And those plateaus are often places, as I said, where doubt can enter in. It's like, what am I doing wrong? Why aren't things getting better? Why is it not changing? Why is it not improving? So at those times when it feels like there's a kind of a plateau, taking some time to reflect back on what have you learned? What have you seen over the course of your practice? What benefits have you gained? This will vary for people depending on how long you've been practicing. I remember when I first book that I read, it talked about not trying to evaluate your practice. That it would be not so helpful to try to each day say, well, what, you know, how am I doing today? But to rather think of it back over a year or 5 years, you know, what have you learned over a longer period of time? And so, you know, you can reflect back and see, you know, even in those first few months of practice, after a few months, I could really see, oh, this is really helpful. This is beneficial. It's giving the mind space around the anger. Yes, this is a direction that I want to keep going. So I could see those benefits. So reflecting on the benefits can be really helpful. Sometimes as we reflect on the benefits, we may actually not be so aware at times of the benefits that we're experiencing. Because a lot of the times the benefits are experienced as an absence of. We experience the benefits in the non-arising of reactivity. And we can kind of habituate to that. You know, we get to a place where life is kind of rolling along and, you know, there's a lot of ups and downs, but we're not like so torqued out by things. There's a lot less reactivity in our lives. And unless we actually consciously reflect on it and think, gosh, you know, this situation, you know, this person saying this to me, if this had happened 2 years ago, my mind would be in a much different state than it is today. So we can reflect on kind of the lessening of the reactivity that we've experienced. You know, difficult situations not producing so much reactivity for us anymore. This can support our confidence. This can support us. And it's time to stop. So I hope this gives you some encouragement to explore your doubt. Thank you.